This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On this Veterans Day, we're checking in with two members of the Massachusetts delegation for their reactions to this week's historic election. We spoke with Congressman Seth Moulton and Congressman Jim McGovern, both Democrats, of course. Moulton represents the state's 6th district. He's in Salem and Marblehead today talking to veterans. We spoke with him earlier, and I began by asking him about the Facebook and Twitter posts he made just after the election, where he wrote that he's, quote, truly sad for this country that he so deeply loves. And he went on to say, quote, each of us must step forward to work with one another. So I asked him just how the Democratic Party plans to do that, as Republicans will be in control of the White House and both chambers of Congress.
Well, it's going to be hard. But as always, we've got to find common ground to work with Republicans on shared priorities for the American people, but also stand up as a bulwark to President-elect Trump when he tries to erode the values that are so fundamental to us and that are enshrined in our Constitution.
Do you have any specific ideas or plans or areas in which you think that the Democrats should put forth the most effort in being that bulwark?
Well, of course, it depends on what Trump plans to do. But if he actually follows through on his campaign promises to discriminate against minorities, to ship people out of the country, to indiscriminately bomb folks overseas, even innocents, then we're going to have to prevent him from doing that.
Congressman, let me ask you something, because you're a thoughtful guy on this issue. Many people in the Democratic Party spent 8 years criticizing the Republican Party for being obstructionist, for saying that they were going to do everything they could to stop President Obama's agenda. I mean, are the Democrats saying the same thing now about President-elect Trump? And if so, how does that actually, you know, move the country forward in terms of finding that common ground, finding compromise solutions that can lead some policy to be enacted in Congress?
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that yet. We're saying that we're going to stand up for our fundamental values and protect the rights of all Americans if Trump assaults them. But at the same time, Democrats have a history in Congress of trying to work across the aisle, of trying to find common solutions, of not just being the obstructionist that the Republican Party has been over the past 10 years.
Now, in your district, a couple of towns did vote for Donald Trump: Salisbury, Rowley, Middleton, Wilmington. You yourself didn't have any opposition in your reelection this week. But I'm wondering, for your constituents in those towns, I mean, how do you plan on talking with them or addressing their concerns and, you know, including what they desire in terms of your advocacy and your work in Congress?
Well, first of all, I'm a representative for everybody in the 6th District: Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Trump voters, Clinton voters, and anybody else. And I take that responsibility seriously. I'm a public servant. I'm accountable to them. I work for them every single day. So first of all, I won't forget that. Second of all, I'm going to listen. I'm actually the single Democrat in Congress, House or Senate, who's held the most town halls in the whole country this past year. I'm going to continue doing that because we need to understand the people who feel left out, who feel disillusioned, who even voted for someone that they don't think can do a good job in the Oval Office but represents change. We need to listen to those people, to hear their concerns, and to find ways that we can address them.
Well, we are speaking to you today, of course, and it's Veterans Day. So if I may, I'd love to ask you a couple of questions about the U.S. military. You yourself served for quite some time. First of all, President-elect Trump, during the campaign, had a lot to say about the military. I mean, he called, you know, the condition of the U.S. military a, quote, disaster. He said that he knows, quote, more about ISIS than the generals do. I mean, some genuinely disparaging things, even as he was throwing his support behind military veterans. So I'm wondering, what do you suggest President-elect Trump should do when he comes into office in the early days to build his relationship with the U.S. Armed Services?
Well, first of all, he has to show some fundamental respect for our military families, and for our Constitution. And he has a lot of work to do in all of those departments, given what he has said on the campaign trail, and also, frankly, his history. I mean, he has a history of disparaging veterans in the private sector long before he ever ran for president. So he has a lot of work to do to restore that respect, and or build, I should say, that respect and faith. I sit on the Armed Services Committee, and I know that there are people on both sides of the aisle who are very concerned about the things that Trump says he will do as commander-in-chief. There are even members of our military who are talking about what it would mean to disobey the orders of the commander-in-chief because they're unconstitutional. It's frightening that we have to have those conversations today, but we do. We've got to make sure that Trump makes decisions that are in the national security of interest of our country.
So, I mean, specifically, you know, what do you think the president-elect should do? I mean, is it changing the way he talks about the military? Who would you like to see appointed as, I don't know, Secretary of Defense? Are there specific things you think he could do?
Well, first of all, he needs to surround himself with smart and experienced people, because ultimately, a lot of his success or failure will be dependent on the team that he brings together. I hope he realizes that the responsibility now on his shoulder as commander-in-chief requires him to rise above it, not just bring in his friends and family members, his business cronies or whoever else, but actually bring in people who know what they're doing when it comes to matters so weighty as our national defense.
Well, let's talk about veterans care here for just a moment, because, of course, you're a veteran. You tried to get care at the VA. You had some difficulty doing that. According to the New York Times, this summer, some improvements had been made at the VA, because a couple of years ago, President Obama signed into law a $15 billion overhaul of health care at the Department of Veterans Affairs. But, however, the Times reported that there's still more than 500,000 veterans who wait more than a month for care. So, you know, what would you like to see done to get that number, I mean, ideally down to zero?
Well, we need to radically reform the VA, and Donald Trump has said that he wants to radically reform the VA. The problem is that the plans he's put forward would actually make it worse. And so we've got to redirect that energy in a positive direction. He wants to just outright privatize the VA, which will actually raise wait times for veterans and raise wait times for everybody else, because so many veterans would be thrown into the private health care system without any of the specialized services that the VA has designed to take care of veterans. So what veterans want, overwhelmingly, is not to privatize the VA, but to reform the VA that we have, to make it act and work more like private sector healthcare that's innovative and responsive to patients' concerns, but fundamentally retain the VA system. So those are the kinds of reforms that people like myself will be fighting for in Congress, the kinds of reforms that veterans who use the VA actually want.
And finally, Congressman, what's your hope for, you know, not just your district or Massachusetts, but the country as it moves forward, you know, in the aftermath of one of the ugliest and most divisive presidential elections we've seen in some time?
One of the hardest parts of this election for a lot of young people is they look at what's happened and say, you know, I was brought up to believe that if I was honest, if I was honorable, and I worked hard, that I could do anything in America, that the American dream can truly be mine. And now to see someone rise to the highest office in the land who hasn't really been honest and honorable is saddening, is disillusioning to a lot of people. But we can't lose faith in our country. We can't lose faith in our democracy. Winston Churchill said that America always does the right thing after we've tried everything else. And maybe this time we're trying something else, but in the long run, we've got to continue moving forward. We can't forget the fundamental principles, the values that make us Americans, that every American, no matter where you're from, what your religion is, what color your skin is, that everybody is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We've got to preserve those values now under a Trump administration, just as we have throughout our history. And it's going to be a fight. But we're going to work on it, and we need everybody to join in that fight together.
Well, Congressman Seth Moulton is spending the day in Salem and Marblehead on this Veterans Day. He took some time to speak with us. Congressman, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
Well, let's turn now to Congressman Jim McGovern. He represents Massachusetts' 2nd District. Congressman McGovern, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Well, happy to be with you.
Well, first of all, react to what you heard your fellow Congressman Seth Moulton say just now about the direction he'd like to see Massachusetts and the nation move forward to following this election. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I'm heartsick over this election, and I know a lot of people all throughout the country are. And the question is, how do we react? I've been trying to talk to people who've been calling me afterwards, you know, who are in deep depression, you know, that what we cannot do is give up. I mean, we have to do more than just agonize. We have to organize. We have to fight for what's best about this country. We can't give up on things that we all value and we think are important.
Yeah. So if we may, let's focus on your district a little bit, because we crunched some of the numbers in terms of how the voting went in the second in your district. And in 18 municipalities, more than half the voters chose Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. Did that surprise you?
Well, look, I represent a very diverse district, and there's a lot of red areas in my district. This election divided a lot of people, and people who voted for Donald Trump voted for him for a number of reasons. Some of those reasons were people just felt, you know, detached from government and from Washington, and they were fed up and they wanted to send a message. And I understand that. And I think Democrats, we need to figure out a strategy to bring some of these people back into the fold. And a lot of the people who voted for Donald Trump, in my opinion, voted against their own self-interest. There's nothing Donald Trump has promised in terms of policies that will help the middle class or those struggling to get in the middle class. I mean, most of his tax policies are geared toward the very wealthy. But I understand the frustration that people have, and Donald Trump, through his bombast, was able to capitalize on that. But I think the majority of people in my district were with Hillary Clinton because not only do I believe they think that she would do a great job as president, but they understand that anger is not a strategy. It's not a policy.
I mean, you are right that the majority of voters in your district did choose Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. The margin there was 55% to 37%. But that's tighter than it was across the state as a whole on average. So I guess what I'm curious about is, you know, have you had conversations since Tuesday with any of your constituents who did vote for Donald Trump? I mean, how are you reaching out to them? And does this change at all sort of how you want to represent your district in Washington?
Well, I've had lots of conversations with people who supported Hillary and with people who supported Trump, and I expect those conversations will continue. And I think one of my biggest concerns is that Donald Trump's campaign has really been, you know, for all of his talk about how he's campaigning against the elite, his campaign in terms of his economic policies is really about embracing the elite, about embracing those who are powerful and those who are well off. And to kind of add on to what my colleague Seth Moulton said, the other part of his campaign, which has really been disturbing to me, has been the focus on division and polarization and hate. You know, I was quite frankly shocked as a result of many encounters I had during this last year with people who basically embraced some of the most hateful aspects of Trump's candidacy, the sexism, the racism, the xenophobia. You know, there's some deep divisions that he helped sow, and we need to figure out a way to bring this country back together. And we need to figure out a way of dealing with some of these issues that people don't want to talk about, like the fact that we still have systemic racism in this country, that women are still not treated equally in this country. Those things have to be addressed. We can't ignore that. And we can't ignore the hate and the division of his campaign. I'm not saying everybody who supported him is in that category. As I said, a lot of people supported him because they were frustrated with their economic situation. But a lot of people out there did support him based on, I think, some of the more dark parts of his campaign.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Congressman, on that point, now that the Democrats are the minority in both houses of Congress, I mean, what can the Democratic Party do to bridge those divides you were just talking about?
Well, part of it is that we need to talk about some of the issues more candidly than we've been willing to do in the past. And we need to try to propose solutions that people believe in. And where there are areas we can agree on, we should agree with them. But where there are areas we don't, you know what? We need to fight.
Yeah. So, Congressman, let me ask you something about that, because I asked this same question to Congressman Moulton as well. You know, I hear in both of you the sense that when it comes to core Democratic values, that you'll fight for them if necessary. And what I asked Congressman Moulton a little earlier was, you know, for 8 years, many people pointed to the Republican Party as a party of obstructionism, a party that just said no to everything that it believed or that it didn't believe in regarding President Obama's agenda. Do the Democrats risk putting themselves in that same position of over the course of a Trump presidency, becoming an obstructionist party, becoming a party that says no because Democrats feel like they would be fighting for the things they believe in.
Well, as I said, we want to work with him where there's common ground. But if he wants to institutionalize discrimination or racism or xenophobia, then we need to use whatever tool is available to us to try to stop him. We're kind of at a crossroads in this country, and I don't want to move backwards. I've been having these conversations with my 15-year-old daughter, who is devastated over this election. She can't quite understand how a man got elected who said the things that he said.
What are you telling her?
What I'm telling her is, we'll get through this. This is a strong country. It's a resilient country. And, just like we were saying all during the campaign, I really do believe that at the end of the day, love trumps hate. I really do. There are a lot of Republicans that I serve with who I know are deep down concerned about a Trump presidency. They don't embrace a lot of the things that he said during the campaign about building walls and deporting Muslims, and certainly were outraged by his comments about women. That's not the country they want either. There's no doubt we have some challenges ahead of us. But here's the deal. I mean, I've been obviously pretty depressed after the election results. But I've told this to my staff, and I've told this to people who called me. We're not defeated. We got to get together, and we got to stand up for what's right. And what's right at the end of the day is not just what the Democrats think or versus what the Republicans think. There are some things that everybody should think falls under the category of right: respecting every individual, being against discrimination, empowering women, increasing wages for workers across this country, building a fairer, better system for everybody. I think there are some things out there that fall into the category of right that may defy political labels, and we need to try to build these coalitions to make sure that those things move forward.
Hmm. Well, Congressman Jim McGovern represents Massachusetts' 2nd District. He's speaking with us today from Hardwick. Congressman, thank you so very much for taking the time.
Happy to be with you.
So that's the view from two Massachusetts congressmen. Let's hear what the state's senior senator has to say. Senator Elizabeth Warren spoke about her vision for the nation's future yesterday. She was at the AFL-CIO Executive Council in Washington. And she acknowledged how brutally divisive and toxic this election was, and that President-elect Trump rode a wave of anger to victory. But then Senator Warren added that Americans have a right to be angry. Here's an excerpt of her speech.
Angry that wages have been stagnant for a generation while basic costs like housing and health care and child care have skyrocketed. Angry that our political system is awash in barely legalized campaign bribery. Angry that Washington tilts the playing field for giant corporations, giving them special privileges and letting them amass enormous economic and political power. Angry that while Washington dithers and spins and does the backstroke in an ocean of money, while the American dream moves further and further out of reach for most families. President-elect Trump spoke to these issues. Republican elites hated him for it, and he didn't care. He did it anyway. He criticized Wall Street's big money and their dominance in Washington, straight up. He supported a new Glass-Steagall bill. He spoke against the need for reform of our trade deals so they aren't the raw deal for the American people. He spoke of the urgency of rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure and putting people back to work. He spoke to the very real sense that millions of Americans have that their government and their economy has abandoned them. The deep worry that people feel over an America that does not work for them is not a liberal worry or a conservative worry. It is not a Democratic worry or a Republican worry. It is the deep worry that led even Americans with deep reservations about Donald Trump's temperament and fitness to vote for him anyway. So let me be 100% clear about this. When President-elect Trump wants to take on these issues, when his goal is to increase the economic security of middle-class families, then count me in. I will push aside our differences, and I will work with him to achieve that goal. If Trump is ready to go on rebuilding American economic security for millions of families, then I am ready, and so are a lot of other people, Democrats and Republicans. As the loyal opposition, we will fight harder, we will fight longer, and we will fight more passionately than ever for the rights of every human being in this country to be treated with respect and dignity. And we do not control the tools of government, but make no mistake, we know what we stand for. The sun will keep rising, and we will keep fighting. Each day, every day, we will fight for the working people of this country. That's what we will do. The time for ignoring the American people is over. It is time for us to come together to work on America's agenda. Democracy demands that we do so, and we are ready.
That's Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking yesterday at the AFL-CIO Executive Council in Washington. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.